This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to Ask Us Anything, where the Frequent Miler team answers your questions live.
All right. Welcome to Frequent Milers Ask Us Anything live on YouTube.
If you want to get stuff like this in your email inbox, you can go to frequentmiler.com/subscribe, join our email list and get all of our posts in your email inbox each week. Join our Frequent Miler Insiders Facebook group to ask questions anytime you'd like and get answers from lots of different folks. But right now, we're going to get to some of the questions that you have been sending us already and those that you send us here live. So I think Steven's probably got the first one queued up for us, right?
Yes. So one of the comments on the Ask Us Anything post asked, as banks tighten up on credit card approvals, I'm sure many have received a denial for lack of recent installment loan information. Has anybody taken out a loan to improve their odds? To me, it makes sense to take out a loan where interest is less than $50 if it means getting approved for even one more card per year with a large bonus. Would love to hear thoughts and experiences. So guys, have any of you ever taken out a loan to improve your credit card approval?
I have not, and I don't remember ever seeing that as a reason I was denied for a credit card either.
Well, let me ask you another follow-up question, Greg. How many ways have you adjusted your behavior based on the reason that you got for a denial? How many times have you adjusted your behavior in any way?
Zero. Why don't you, for the, 100th time, explain why?
Ignore the letter, folks. Ignore the letter. The letter that they give you that says you were denied for A or B or C, for the most part, you can ignore. Now, there are some cases where, like, for instance, we know there's a 524 rule with Chase. And so if they tell you you've had too many new accounts in the last 24 months for a Chase card, we know you're likely not going to get approved for that card. However, when it's like too many inquiries or you need more installment loans or things that are very kind of squishy like that, I don't put any faith at all in those things. I've said a million times before, I remember the day we got an email from someone who said they were denied for too many new accounts and they had opened zero new accounts in 24 months. It's just like the letter gives you a reason to make you go away. If it was that simple, then the credit bureaus would have no fancy algorithm to sell any of the banks. It's complicated, and it's probably not something that an individual can explain anyway. So in most cases, I don't put a lot of faith in whatever those letters say, and I certainly don't take out a loan in order to increase my odds, because I know that all these other folks on the Frequent Miler team are getting cards all the time, and they're not taking out loans. So I don't need a loan in order to get a credit card approval. It's just for whatever reason, whatever complex mix of reasons, they decided they didn't want to give it to me that day. But you could always just call reconsideration, try again. Sometimes you'll still get a no, and that's okay. And I don't soul search too hard for the reasons why. Just give it another shot, at some point down the road, 6 months, 12 months, whatever. Don't get too caught up in it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think the banks are required to give a reason, but apparently they're not required to give a correct reason. required to give a reason. Right. Nobody audits the reason, whether that's true or not.
The fact that the reconsideration exists suggests that the reason is not the reason, right? Like, that's not it. Because if that was it, it'd be just cut and dry. Okay, you don't have any installment loans, you can't get approved. But if there's a chance you can call reconsideration and get somebody to reconsider, then that's clearly not like any kind of hard and fast thing.
Yeah. And on the topic of like installment loans themselves, the danger with doing that is that you take out a loan and it shows up on your credit report, and then a bank denies you because they see that you've just taken out a loan and think, oh, maybe he's not going to be able to pay the credit card back if he's having to take out this installment loan. And so that could potentially actually hurt your chances anyway. So I certainly wouldn't bother getting a loan.
We do have a post, by the way, with the issuers by bank or the rules by issuer, and that's worth checking out because some issuers do have those hard and fast rules like the 524 rule, or pretty solid rules in terms of the velocity with which you can apply for new cards. And like those things that have been discovered and like played out over thousands and thousands and thousands of data points are one thing, but like a one-off answer you get is totally different.
Yeah. All right, we've spoken. Don't get the loan, but do read that post. On to live questions. We're going to start with Greg here. Recently canceled a stay at Kalala Island inside the cancellation window and sadly had 225,000 Hilton Honors points taken away. Have any of you ever forgot to cancel an award in time and had to pay the price?
Ouch, that's painful. Yeah. So I don't think I've ever had anything that big happen. I've certainly tried to cancel before within the cancellation window, but I've been able to, the times that that's happened, I've been able to get my points back one way or another. With a number of chains, it is sometimes the case that the rules say you can't cancel within X number of days before the stay, but they don't say you can't change in that number of times. So I've had success many times just calling, moving the date forward, and then canceling right away after doing that, and then getting my points back. With Hilton and these SLH properties, though, I don't think they let you do that within the change window. And I had a situation where I had to cancel within the window. The hotel, I contacted the hotel, and they were fine with letting me cancel it. So I had to get like Hilton on the line and say the hotel says it's fine, and somehow I connected them up and got my points back.
Okay, so contacting the chain and connecting them to the specific hotel might be one avenue to try.
Yeah, and I'd say that like, if you just forgot about it and missed the stay and it was in the past, you might be out of luck there.
Maybe not.
But you know, if it's like you forgot to cancel it within 60 days and now it's, you know, day number 58, then maybe you'd have luck canceling. I also had an SLH property we had booked in Fiji, and on the way to like get to Los Angeles to go to Fiji, my son started throwing up, and so we couldn't go. And I was concerned I was going to lose all my points because same thing, you know, there was a long cancellation window. But exactly like Greg said, I contacted the hotel, I explained the situation, and they were fine with giving me a full refund. So I got all the points back.
Yeah.
And no harm in asking.
And yeah, if it's a place that you actually still want to stay at, but you just can't make that particular trip, just see if you can push the dates and then just simply not cancel and go ahead in the future. Because yeah, the property, especially if they have standard award availability for like further dates in the future, that might be something that they're willing to do. I had a situation for our upcoming challenge recently where I had to book a one night hotel stay, and I messed up with that because I booked it on August 3rd. And I thought that I had changed the date to October 3rd, but apparently I'd left it as August 3rd.
Uh-oh.
And so as soon as I submitted it, I realized that it said that I'd booked it for that particular night. And I was like, oh man, like what a rookie mistake, especially because we've only got $1,000 to play with in cash and 100,000 points. So like the money and the points are limited. And so I was like, oh, I don't want to have to like cancel that and be out of pocket on that. But contacted the hotel straight away and explained, look, made this mistake, booked it for tonight. It was actually meant to be for 2 months to the day. Is it possible just to move the stay? Even if it costs less, then I appreciate that I won't necessarily get a refund, but can we move it? And they were absolutely fine with that, despite it being past the cancellation period. So yeah, no points wasted on that one. And wow. The stay is still there. I need to call up just to make sure that it is still showing up in their system, because on the hotel chain's website, it still showed the original date. But then we called them a couple of days later, and then and they were perfectly fine with that. They said that, yeah, that's still showing on our system, but I'm still going to be calling before that stay again just to make sure. But yeah, you might have some luck.
Moral of the story, you might as well ask.
Yes.
No harm in asking. All right, Stephen, there are good and bad business class products, sometimes even within the same carrier, depending on the plane and the route. How do you quickly filter out the bad options when doing award searches and alerts?
I personally don't. I mean, like there might be a carrier that I just would simply discount and not bother paying attention to. But for the most part, I'm looking for the best value, both with miles and with like taxes and fees. And so if there are some decent options, then sure, I might pick whichever one's best, but for the most part I'm going for value. And so if there's something that where it's going to be comfortable enough and it's a decent price, then I'm just going to go for that. I'm not going to like spend too much time worrying about, okay, well this one's like on a certain type of Airbus, this other one's on a different type of Airbus, this one's got a slightly nicer suite or something like that. If the nicer option is available for the same price, sure, I'll go for that. But I'm not someone who is quite as worried about that. I'm curious if Greg and Nick are.
Yeah. What do you guys say?
Well, why don't you go first, Nick?
I don't do something specific because I'm mostly familiar with which ones are the ones I'm not going to want, so I just ignore them. Like Iceland Air, for instance, I know has angled flat seats, so I just ignore them in search results. I don't like do anything special to filter it out. When it comes to individual carriers, Qatar is one that's really difficult with this because they've got so many different business class seats, and some of them kind of suck, and some of them are really, really nice. And I don't remember. I always have to Google it and look it up, and so I don't have a great tip as to how to do this. So I'm hoping Greg the frequent miler has the magical answer here because I just kind of mentally ignore the ones I know I'm not going to like.
Yeah. No, I do the same thing as Nick. I see Iceland Air or a couple other things that I know I kind of want to avoid, and I'll just sort of mentally filter those out. Then if it's a particularly long flight, so I really care about it being a nicer experience, then I wait till I see. Okay, I found award availability on this airline. I'm not familiar with their business class, and then I'll Google it and see what people say about it. Another quick thing you could do is bring it up on Google Flights, and as long as you've selected business class, Google Flights will show you either like for business class, either like recliner seat, you want to avoid that, lie flat seat, which is fine, but it might still be that there are better things like a suite with doors, and it'll tell you if it's a suite. And so that gives you a quick hint as to sort of what level of business class you'd be looking
I
at.
think an important point to make along with that, because I think it's obvious to us, but maybe not obvious to somebody asking, is the reason that like the standard recliner seat, I'll just ignore that entirely, is because that's going to cost the same number of miles in a lot of cases as a lie flat seat. If the airline has both, then it's going to be the business class cabin either way, and I don't want to pay the business class price for a recliner seat on a long haul international business class award. I want to get the lie flat if they have that. So that's why we ignore. It's not that I can't sit in a recliner seat. It's that I don't want to pay the same price for a recliner seat that I could pay for a lie flat seat.
Yeah, that's a good tip. All right, Nick, how many JetBlue airports do you have so far?
I have 21. The rest of my family has 20 because I did the Duncan flight with Greg to Orlando. My family has not flown into Orlando yet. They will. We will. I'll fly with them later this year. So we've done 20, which should get us the 100 or the 1.4 million total and 350,000 points each. I say should because we did have a couple of Etihad awards in there that may or may not count. I expect them to count, but there's a lot of controversy as to whether or not they will. So we'll see. At the very least, we should be getting the 150 for 15 because we've definitely booked 15 in ways that'll qualify. So, but no points yet. The promotion terms say, I think, 2 to 3 or 3 to 4 weeks before you'll see the points. And it's a little confusing as to how that's written. It says something like, let's say it's 3 to 4 weeks after completion. And in my mind, that was 3 to 4 weeks after you've completed 15, you'll get the first 150. And then 3 to 4 weeks after 20, you'd see the next 200. But a few readers have said that that's not the way JetBlue is interpreting it, that they're saying once you've hit 25, you'll get your points and status within 3 to 4 weeks or within 3 to 4 weeks after the promotion ends on December 31st. So the word on the street that I've heard is that people aren't seeing the points post until they've hit 25 destinations. Now, I say it that way because it's a pretty a pretty compressed time period so far. So I'm not really sure that very many people have hit 4 weeks since they finished doing 15. There can't be that many that have had that big of a gap since 15. So I'm trying to give it some time to see if they just automatically post, and then I'll worry about reaching out to JetBlue later on about that. In terms of 20 versus 25, 25 gives you the status, of course. Later this year, we already had, like, I have the free stay at Atlantis booked because of my Caesars Diamond status. So we already were going to fly to Nassau. JetBlue flies there. So we're going to pick up Nassau and we're going to connect in Orlando on the way. So the rest of the family will pick that up. We've got a flight to Tahiti from Los Angeles. So JetBlue flies to Los Angeles. We were going to fly there anyway. So we're going to fly JetBlue. So we've got those other five that were just with existing trips already. So we will hit all 25 by the end of the year. And if we have to make up a couple because a couple didn't count, we will. But like I said, I have fully expected that they're going to count. So that's where we are. And now I'm laying low. That was it. That was our big August push to get the 20 or 21. And then the existing trips will take care of the other five. So I won't actually be finished with 25 until about mid-December. My last trip will be to visit family around Christmas, which makes me a little nervous because that's so close to the end of the window that I want to know before December 31st if I need another airport or two. So I'm a little nervous about that. So I may work in another backup flight that I haven't discussed with my wife yet. So we'll see. I don't know if she's listening. So we'll see.
Will you continue to update that post that you've been putting out on Sundays?
I didn't intend to do another update with that, but maybe I'll do one more anyway with the fact that we've got the 20. I kind of expected the previous one to be the last one because I think there was only one more destination that I hit after that. I can't recall exactly, so I'll have to take a look back at it and update it. And then eventually I'll report out the full costs of everything too, how much exactly we spent on all the flights and everything else. So, yeah. So yes, look for an update on that at some point here.
Cool. All right, great. Greg, back to you. If the Chase Inc. train shuts down, what would be the team's strategy to earn more Chase points?
There's still the opportunity to earn 5X in some categories and spending on the Sapphire Reserve card to get 4X or 8X for travel, depending on how you do it, things like that. Sort of the ways that are intended by the cards is a good option if the opportunity to earn a lot of points through welcome bonuses goes away. I don't know that it would ever go away completely, as much as, you know, maybe you can't apply as often as we have in the past. So I think, just like everyone else, we'll be applying less often and doing what we can to earn through spend.
All right, one more question for you before we move on to Steven. Is that the complete Delft House collection behind you, or are there more? And explain maybe what that is to those who don't know that.
That is my complete Delft House collection. It depends what the meant in that context, because so KLM has probably, I don't know, 100, 150, 200. I don't know how many of these little houses. And it's really fun going to their international lounge in Amsterdam, because you go up an escalator where the whole wall is glass with all these little houses like on display. And it's a really cool thing to ride up that escalator next to all those little houses. But these are little model, you know, Dutch houses that you get whenever you fly KLM business class.
So if you haven't Googled it already, Greg, Steven, and Nick, guess how many different houses there are. Nick,
I
looks like
did.
You already Googled
I already did, but so I won't give the answer. But I will say, when Greg says little Dutch houses, they are actual replicas of real places, real houses. So
that's
like there's
cool.
Like the Anne Frank house is one of them. And like there's the opera house. I got a house that I don't know, like maybe the king lived in or lives in. I can't remember. But anyway, they're all like numbered, so you know which one, you can look up which house it is. And it's a real house.
What a good idea. So Greg and Steven, guesses. Greg, how many do you think there are?
I'll say 250.
I was going to say 279.
Jeez, guys.
That's really specific.
I would have guessed about the same as them, for what it's worth.
Wow.
I thought there were probably that many.
Well, you'll be disappointed to find out there's only 105.
Oh, man. The first number I threw out earlier was the closest.
Yeah, yep, you were 100 close. Or close. Yeah, I thought there were way more than that. So,
Wow. I mean,
I was going more just because when you like asked us, it kind of sounded like there was probably going to be like way more. Than
that's what I thought, too.
But that's why I like boosted up, I guess, because I was figuring.
Wow.
I guess there's only so many historically significant houses, I guess.
Could start going to just ordinary houses, I suppose.
I think there's,
if you want to hit that 279.
I think the problem is there's only so many tiny little house builders to build these little houses. So.
Oh, you know what else?
There's
for anybody who hasn't done these before, they have a selection and they bring them around on the plane. And usually I think they just let you pick what you want off the tray.
Right.
But it's not just the newest ones on the tray. They will have a mixture on the planes of what it is they have. So you might be able to get one of the old ones. Some of them are like, there were fewer of them produced. And so they're kind of collectory
collectors?
Items.
So your research.
Yeah, you could, if you like that kind of thing, then do your research ahead of time and know what you're looking for.
I'm guessing Google Flights, when it says whether or not your business class is lie flat or reclined, doesn't say, you know.
Doesn't say. Yeah, unfortunately, no.
Just going to have to count on luck. All right, Stephen, am I using award tools wrong? I set alerts and sometimes get emails for them, but the awards always seem to be gone by the time I check them an hour or two later. Not sure what to do differently.
My guess is that you're probably going for an in-demand award and that you might not be the only person who's setting these alerts, which means that whoever gets there first is going to be the one to book it. So that's my guess, is that if you are actually getting these alerts, then that means that availability has opened up. If availability is not there by the time you come to book, then yeah, it just means that somebody else has managed to snap it up before you, most likely. I haven't heard about issues with kind of like false positives where various award tools will send you an email saying there's availability, even if there's not. So I think that's the greatest likelihood. So yeah, I'd say just keep using those tools every so often, maybe just run a manual search just in case you get lucky with finding something before the tool has had a chance to alert you. And yeah, I don't tend to use alert tools all that much just because I haven't had much of a need in terms of flights and things like that. I think Greg's probably used it far more, like especially even just when researching for the various award tools posts that he's written. So have you encountered this kind of thing before?
Not exactly. I've seen things like incorrect alerts, like I got alerted to a Qatar business class flight to Europe through Doha from the US that was, it claimed it was like 45,000 points. So I was like jumping on to book that thing right away. And of course it was actually like 245,000 points. So, but no, I haven't encountered that. In general, when the alert has been correct, I've been able to jump on and get the award.
All right. Anyone else have any tips to add before we move on? Okay, Nick, what are your 524 strategies? Do you always stay under? If and when do you go over? How much do you go over? And do you bunch the applications or do you spread them out?
I haven't been under 524 in years at this point. So no, it's been a long time since I've been under. Well, I say years. Actually, it's only been, I guess, not quite 2 years now, because I did get a Chase card almost 2 years ago. I'm close. A couple months from now, I'd be under 524 again. At the same time, I still applied for the Atmos Summit card. And so, I didn't get it, or at least haven't yet. I need to follow up with reconsideration. But anyway, regardless, I wouldn't hold out that. I'm not nearly as married to 524, I think, as some people are. I have most of the Chase cards that I really want at this point. And yeah, I would enjoy getting a welcome bonus or two, but I'm also not willing to forego all of the other good welcome bonuses out there. I picked up 2 Hawaiian cards in one day earlier this year, even though I knew that was going to put off 524 for a while, because I knew that the cards that I would want to get when I get under 524 are probably still going to be here next year and the year after that. Whereas I didn't expect that the Hawaiian cards would be around forever. And the Summit card, again, it's a fantastic offer. It's a good card, and it's a card I want to have. And so I wouldn't hold out for 1 or 2 or 3 Chase cards and miss out on 1 or 2 or 3 really good opportunities now. So I don't apply for every card out there, because I wouldn't mind getting under 524, but I'm also not going to close my eyes and shut my ears and try to not pay attention to the good offers that are out there, because think of all of the offers I'd have missed over the last couple of years if I was just solely focused on trying to stay under 524. There's only so many cards that I can get once I'm under 524 anyway. I've got a bunch of the Chase cards already. So anyway, that's my take on it.
So your strategy is to keep the cards you like.
Yeah. I mean, I have the collection of Chase cards that really matter to me at this point. So, I'd be happy to get a welcome bonus or two, but I'm not going to give up 5 or 6 welcome bonuses that I could get to get 1 or 2 that would be kind of nice to have. That's my take on the strategy.
And is anyone, Greg or Steven, are either of you drastically different than that? Similar?
I've been hovering under 524 for a bit now. So I made a concerted effort to get under in order to get a certain Chase card. I forget which one it was. It might have been, I don't know, the Hyatt business card or something. I forget why. But anyway, I got under, and since then I've been applying for, you know, new business cards regularly and applying for new consumer cards more judiciously and trying to spread those out so that at any given time, if I do go over 524, it won't be that long before I go under again, is kind of how I've been approaching it. So far, that hasn't meant me giving up lots of applications that I would have done, especially since sometimes, you know, I manage my wife's and my son's credit card applications as well. And so if there's a card that where I really want the welcome bonus, but it would put me over 524, and for some reason, it, you know, it's not good enough that I want it to put me over 524. I could throw in the applications for my wife and son and get points that way.
Yeah, that helps. All right, Stephen, anything drastically different?
No, similar kind of situation. I thought that I was under 524 and that I was at 424 a few months ago, only to realize that a Capital One credit business credit card was reporting and showing up on my thing, on my credit report. And so that meant that I was actually at 524. And so I got declined by Chase because of that, which was really annoying because I had completely forgotten about that when looking through my own records. So I think I'm at like 524, 624. My wife's a similar kind of thing. And so I do want to get under. But yeah, there's the Citi Strata Elite that I'm interested in getting for my wife. I'm really interested in the Atmos Summit card because of the 3x on foreign purchases, like being in the UK now, that would be quite sweet to have. So, and I don't have any of the Hawaiian cards personally, so I could go for the business one, but the personal one has a better welcome offer. So yeah, I'm trying to weigh up at the moment like what I should go with, but I've ended up procrastinating and not getting anything, but I don't feel like I'm getting in very much closer to being under 524, so I really need to just do something, basically. So
all right, so a little of everything amongst the team. Okay, Greg, which credit travel portals or travel booking portals have you confirmed that will still earn you your hotel points, and then maybe explain a little bit what that means?
Okay, yeah, so normally when you book hotels through an online travel portal, an online booking agency, you will not earn hotel points for that stay. You will not earn elite credits for that stay. And you may or may not benefit from having elite status during that stay when you book through a third party portal. However, sometimes the travel portals are being set up so that they, in certain situations, they'll set up your reservation such that you will earn points, you will earn elite credits, and you will get your elite benefits. And the first one, like, that we were aware of to do that was American Express with Fine Hotels and Resorts and the Hotel Collection, where they promise that they do that. Now, I could say that we've had lots of individual reports of people being frustrated because in specific situations that didn't work out that way for them. But in general, that's what you should expect when booking through those two platforms. With Chase, with their travel portal, they have it set up so that all of the hotels in the Edit collection are supposed to work that way, as well as some other ones. And the way you know that the other ones are like that is that in the search results, when you're looking for a hotel, it'll actually tell you in the search results, this stay is eligible for loyalty points, something along those lines. So that's how you know that that's happening there. We don't know. Another one that apparently does it is Bilt. So their Bilt Rewards portal is being set up so that most of the bookings, at least over time, they're switching over to a situation where most bookings will be direct with the hotel instead of going through the sort of online travel agency type of situation. And that'll give you your points that way. I don't know how you can tell, you know, whether it's happening that way or not.
What I've been told is if it has the place to enter your loyalty number, that means you're going to earn the hotel points with Bilt. So if you're looking at a hotel reservation with a Hilton property, for instance, if it has the space for you to enter your Hilton Honors number, then it's set up so that you'll earn the points. And if it doesn't have that, which I've seen it doing searches, so I've seen the difference, even within a single chain like that. If it doesn't have that box, then that means you're not going to earn the hotel points. But over time, I'm told that they will have eventually, I think, all of the five major chains set up to be able to earn your loyalty points. So Hilton, Marriott, IHG, Accor, and Hyatt. I was trying to think who I forgot. So that should long-term be the case. I think it just takes a while to build that out.
Yeah, yeah. And then we still don't really know about Citi. I'm pretty confident you won't earn your loyalty points when booking through Citi, but I haven't heard any data points one way or another yet.
Consider that an official prediction. We can write it down. See if you're right. All right, Stephen. I know you weren't part of the coffee break, but I'm pretty sure you know this answer anyway. After listening to last coffee break, you can freely transfer Chase Ultimate Rewards points between spouses after setting it up, correct?
I believe that is correct.
Yes.
So I don't know if there were any particular quirks that Greg and Nick had gotten into. I don't think that it necessarily even has to be a spouse as such. It just has to be someone in your household. So if it's just like your partner or potentially even a roommate or something like that, you could do that provided you do live at the same address.
Yeah, we talked about moving points from one household member to another. What we didn't mention on the show is that you could then also move them back if you want to later. So it was in the context of, hey, it's a good idea to move all the points to a grandfathered Sapphire Reserve card to lock in the ability to redeem for 1.5 cents per point for the next 2 years. But you know, some follow-up questions were, well, what if I do that, move my points there, but want to change my mind about how I want to use them? Can I pull them back to the other person? And yeah, you can.
And if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, Saturday, our how-to post about how exactly that's done will go out. So if you subscribe, you should get a notification of that, or you'll also see it on the blog. So here's another question I'm going to take. This person says, how do I ask a question?
That's very meta. You did it.
I know. I just had to answer it to make this person's reality. So you ask a question just how you ask that question by commenting on this video in the feed, in the chat feed. But if you have a question not during an Ask Us Anything Live, we do have a Facebook group, Frequent Miler Insiders. That's really useful for asking questions as well. Join that group and you can ask questions to our very active community. All right, Nick, what's going on with Citi and suddenly freezing already approved Strata Elite accounts?
Don't know. That's first I've
Not
heard of it.
Not something that you've heard? All right. If we hear something,
sorry.
We'll say
anybody
something.
Else know something? No.
I've not heard anything about that. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they end up freezing accounts where people have spent excessive amounts on like the weekend nights on dining or something like that. Like if it's like substantial amounts. But other than that, no, I haven't heard any like major data points of that happening. So I'm curious now.
So this is our first time hearing that. Okay. Greg, are there times that you buy points? We've answered this question a few times and then Ask Us Anything, but we might as well answer it again. Do you ever buy points?
Yeah. For me, it's very rare because I have plenty of transferable points and usually that can handle whatever I need. I think the last time I bought points was quite a while ago when there was a really good sale on Choice points. And this was before Citi had the ability to transfer one to two to Choice. So buying points for less than a half cent each, which was the case at that time, was a really good deal.
All right. Any of the rest of you have any drastically different approach?
IHG points I've bought quite a few in the past. That was back when we were living in hotels and Airbnbs, though. So I probably won't be buying anywhere near as many going forward. But our balances are fairly low, and so I might end up picking up some at some point when they go on sale for half a cent each, just because that can be a good option. Back when there were daily getaways deals, I bought Choice points a couple of times from them before, because that was a pretty good deal at the time. But daily getaways is no more. So, but other than that, yeah, I don't tend to buy points or miles.
All right. Stephen, there are a lot of reports of Chase telling people that the sign-up bonus on Chase Sapphire Preferred or Chase Sapphire Reserve is now once per lifetime. Did you hear anything on this?
We've heard all sorts. So before the Sapphire Reserve revamp, it sounded like it would be possible to get the welcome offer if you've had it before, and like all of the stuff that we were sent seemed to be very explicit about the fact that there was no issue with that, and that if you had a Sapphire Preferred, you could still end up picking up the Sapphire Reserve and stuff. And that didn't end up being the case. So people were applying and then they were being declined specifically, or like being a, or getting a pop-up basically saying that you're not eligible because you've had this card before and have had this welcome offer before. You could still proceed and get the card, just minus the welcome offer, which wasn't what we had been advised. But yeah, that seems to be the way that Chase has decided to implement it, even though it wasn't what they said that they'd implement originally.
All right. So this next question is for Greg and Nick. We'll start with Nick. Have Greg or Nick changed their evaluations of Alaska Atmos versus AA miles after the removal announcement of SQ? What is that?
Singapore
and LATAM awards.
So our personal evaluations of them or our reasonable redemption? So our reasonable redemption values are based on data that we've had access to regarding the average value of points used, and removing those two partners is probably not going to make a measurable effect on what the reasonable redemption value shows for Alaska miles. Personally, I'm not particularly concerned about the loss of Singapore because I hadn't been using Alaska miles for Singapore flights. If you have, I could totally understand how that would be a major devaluation for you because they do or have had access to more Singapore award space than most other partners, save for Air Canada, I suppose. But that wasn't my use case for Alaska miles for the most part. So that didn't necessarily bother me. I'm very bummed about LATAM because there aren't very many great ways to get to South America in lie-flat business class using points. And this was a really good one. So I'm very disappointed. I'm also not shocked though, because you know, Delta owns a stake in LATAM, and I think we all kind of thought for a long time that LATAM and Alaska wouldn't stay partners forever, and we've been kind of surprised that it continued on. And so I'm not shocked that it's happened, and it's a bummer and it stinks, and I was planning to use it and probably I'm not going to be now because I don't think we're going to take the trip that we had originally booked. So I'm very bummed, but that said, I've only used Alaska miles to fly LATAM once during our Party of Five challenge, and I have many, many more times already booked awards to and from Europe and to and from Asia and other carriers with Alaska miles. So my main use cases are those. My main use case at this point is really flights to and from Europe. And so it doesn't really affect how I look at the prospect of earning Alaska miles very much. I think it's a bummer, but it's not like... Not something that I'm like, oh, I don't want Alaska miles anymore. I still want Alaska miles.
So your opinion has not changed since that podcast episode.
No, I mean, I'm still bummed. Yeah, I'm bummed that they're losing them. But no, my opinion about my excitement about Alaska miles has not waned in any meaningful way.
And Greg, how about you?
Yeah, my reaction is pretty much exactly the same as Nick's.
All right. Small potatoes. You guys are unconcerned about that.
I don't know if that's the right way to say it. Yeah.
It's a bummer that we're losing it, but it doesn't change the fact that we are bullish on Alaska miles for other things. And
especially
those other things dominated how we were using Alaska miles anyway, personally. So we're not going to look at Alaska miles and say, wow, for us, they're worth less than before, because it's not making a material difference when we haven't been booking LATAM.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Whereas I have booked Air Tahiti Nui this year. I've booked Condor this year. Greg's booked American Airlines a few times this year. If they lost all of those partners too, then, we'd obviously have a different perspective.
Yeah. All right. Steven, we'll start with you and we'll make this an everyone question. Y'all have flown some epic flights to Asia. What's your all-time favorite way to get to Asia? Looking to book a trip to hit Tokyo, Shanghai, and Hong Kong. Most epic ways to get to Asia, Stephen.
I mean, Based on what I've experienced myself, I mean, ANA first class was pretty nice. I would love to fly EVA Air or EVA Air. I forget which what the pronunciation of that one is. In business class, because that was fantastic. Flew them back in 2017. So it's been 8 years, and it was just a absolutely superb experience. The food was fantastic. The service was great. It was like a nice, comfortable seat. There was just absolutely nothing wrong that we experienced from what I can remember. So yeah, I would love to fly EVA again.
All right, Nick, any different suggestion? Favorite way to
You
Asia?
know, the vast majority of Asian carriers are really nice. So it's really kind of splitting hairs. Do I have a favorite? I don't know. I mean, they're all really. Japan Airlines first class is great. ANA first class is great. Singapore Airlines first class is great. I mean, I don't think, I think the one that's available when I want to take my trip is my favorite option because they're all kind of hard to get.
That's a really good answer. I was having a hard time thinking how to answer this, but yeah, that's a good way to say it.
All right. Nick, what exactly does the Chase Sapphire Reserve authorized user get besides their own priority pass access?
Let's see. Get your own access to Sapphire lounges, I would assume. I don't know, to be honest with you, for sure, because we've never added each other's, or like my wife has the Sapphire Reserve in our household, and she's never added me as an authorized user. So I don't know for sure, but I would assume you would get access to like getting national executive elite status, not executive elite, but executive status with national car rentals. I don't know. What else, Greg? What am I missing?
Yeah, I'm not even sure if you would get those things, since you, I think you'd have the same credit card
Card
number.
number, because
I
Chase
don't know
does
if they
it
would
that
let
way.
you do multiples.
Yeah, you're
Yeah, it's
right. You're quite
unclear to me
right.
that there's anything else other than that person can, charge travel and things and get the same protections that you
Yeah.
would get. But yeah, to me, that's a way too expensive authorized user fee to even consider. I can't see paying for an authorized user for the new Sapphire Reserve, because it's what? It's $195, I think, if I'm remembering right,
That's something ridiculous. Yeah.
per authorized user. And that's, I mean, that's more, than most cards, let alone
Right.
most authorized user cards.
All right, Greg, any tips for improving approval odds with Citi? Recently denied for the AA personal card. I do have a Costco card that I have not been using, but other than that, no Citi cards. Thanks.
I can't think of any specific, information I have that helps get approved with Citi. Do you guys have anything?
No, I mean, Citi's like fairly finicky. I remember, I guess it was 2, maybe 3 years ago, Citi increased the welcome offer on what's now the Strata Premier, and so many people applied for it, and so many people just got flat out declined, that they've just got some really strict and or weird approval rules, it seems. And so I don't know if that's still the case, because I'm not able to get Citi cards anymore, but I guess maybe try putting some spend on your Costco card just in case. That's a little bit like with Amex, where if you put spend, then you might get out of pop-up jail. Maybe it's like that with Citi, but I've never heard an actual data point where someone's actually done that in order to be able to get approved with them.
Stephen, what is your holy grail of first class suite? Emirates, Etihad, JAL? We'll make this an everyone question, and we'll start with you, Stephen.
You're asking the person who's probably more an economy class
I know,
traveler,
that's
I imagine.
occurred to
I
me
mean,
as I
I
was.
did really enjoy Emirates First Class when we did fly them, although we didn't end up getting the full experience because it wasn't the plane that has the shower with it. Plus, we booked it like an hour beforehand, literally at the very last minute. And so they didn't end up having the full first class catering on board. So we weren't able to have any caviar on that particular flight. But it was still a fantastic experience nonetheless. I think Greg and Nick probably are much better able to compare some of their experiences as to which one was their favorite overall.
All right, Holy Grail, Nick.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to go with Greg first. I think it's hard because the experiences with each one was different. Like You know, I've said before, I'll say again, flying ANA first class with the rest of the frequent miler team was such a unique experience. Like, when are you ever going to get to fly something like that with four friends? It just, it doesn't happen. It was one of those once in a lifetime kind of a things. So that's super memorable because I never have had and likely never will have that exact experience again. So ANA first class kind of holds a special place for that. But then like Singapore first class, I think if I had to pick one favorite, I think the combination of food and service in Singapore has probably been my favorite. And I haven't flown their newer, fancier first class product even, and I really liked it. But that's tough because we're really splitting hairs over excellent first class products. Most of the airlines that fly an international first class cabin do it well. And so I think it's hard for me to pick one over the others. So I'll tell you Singapore today, but if I find a word availability on Japan Airlines first class tomorrow, that might be my new favorite. I mean, the salon champagne that they served was fantastic. So
it really is.
How about you, Greg?
Yeah. So I interpreted the question a little bit differently. I thought they're asking not really what was my favorite that I've flown, but what's the one to aspire to the most? And I think in my book, it'd be Etihad First, the residence. So what that is we've talked a lot about Etihad First apartments, where you have a whole kind of room to yourself, and there is a shower on board, which is separate, that's shared with the other Etihad First passengers. But on that same flight, there is a two-room suite called the residence, which has like a living room, a big, like, I think queen size bed or double bed, and a bathroom, private bathroom with a shower. And what they typically do these days is not sell that suite, but rather offer it as an upgrade, a paid upgrade from Etihad First apartment. So what I would look to do, and I hope to do someday, is you know, book Etihad First apartments, and if I don't get the upgrade, you know, it's an awesome experience as it is. So it wouldn't be horrible, but, you know, hopefully get the opportunity to upgrade to the residence and try that out. I think that would be kind of the pinnacle of things to try. We had a Frequent Miler Insiders group member who reported that they got a free upgrade. They don't know why they were picked, but they got a free upgrade to the residence. And so that was super sweet for them. I guess nobody had paid for the upgrade, so they just gave it to one of the passengers.
Okay. Nick, I'm curious if you continued on with casino status matching in Atlantic City. I still have Bali's Superstar and am now eligible to rematch to Hard Rock Ocean. Curious if you've done so yet.
Great question. I still have the Bali Superstar also, and I intended to match that back around. I haven't, because now Ocean has, well, first of all, they instituted the requirement to earn a certain number of tier credits, 250 tier credits, in order to qualify for the free cruise. And so that requires some gambling. I was still, for the sake of science, interested in going to do that and see how I could do that with as limited downside as possible. But they changed their cruise partner to Virgin Voyages. And unfortunately, that doesn't interest me because we travel with our kids and Virgin Voyages is adults only. So I wasn't interested then in going down and gambling enough to earn the 250 tier credits in order to get a cruise that I wasn't going to take anyway. Virgin Voyages had numerous match opportunities where you could get a free cruise for a while over the last couple of years, and we haven't done it because we're not taking one of those cruises. So it's not as big of a carrot. And I believe you also, they may have even increased the number of tier credits you have to earn, and you have to earn those for the complimentary stay in Las Vegas also. So I haven't felt a sense of urgency to go do it again. The other reason that I haven't felt a sense of urgency is because Caesar's new credit card now offers the ability to spend to diamond status. And so the reason why the whole merry-go-round thing was important to get on and stay on this year is because there was no easy way to get Caesar's Diamond anymore. Now there is again, because I say easy, it's not really easy because there is a high spending requirement to earn enough tier credits for diamond. But if you have the capacity to do a lot of spend, it's possible to earn diamond status with the Caesar's
Visa Signature card, and that's kind of appealing. The card is a pretty good deal. It's $150 a year is the annual fee, and you get a free one night stay each year after anniversary, up to $300. You get $100 dining credit. So if you go to Vegas or Atlantic City with any kind of regularity, that card is relatively appealing. And again, especially if you have the capacity for really high spend. So I'm less concerned with staying on the merry-go-round now because I know I could spend my way to diamond status on a Caesars card if I really decided I wanted it again. And right now I'm just not interested in that particular cruise opportunity. So it hasn't been a focal point for me now.
All right. We're going to do, I think, one more question. And this could be a long topic if we wanted it to be, but we're going to keep it short and keep it to everybody. So I'm going to simplify the question a bit. Apologies to the original asker. What are you spending on annual fees? I love the game and I do the same, but I'm curious what your fees are looking like. So I'm going to say, let's not think about, oh, does that count as an expense? Because I'd be paying for that. You know, okay. Just your quick estimate of how many. What's the total cost of your annual fees each year, roughly? Starting with Greg, quick estimate.
I have no idea. Too many? Too much? I would guess. I mean, it's got to be thousands of dollars because I have quite a few ultra premium cards in my collection right now, and with each one, I try to make sure I'm getting. If I keep it for the second year after getting the welcome bonus, I try to make sure I'm getting at least as much value, hopefully more than the annual fee from it each year. But just like Nick posted recently, I need to go through my stuff and start paring down. It's just too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Steven, so we've got multi-thousands from Greg somehow, but not that you're glad about it. And,
that's a good summary.
And Stephen, how about you?
Same, yeah. Like we've been paring down how many business platinums and things we've had over the last couple of years from all the no lifetime language offers. Yeah, it's kind of a painful amount when adding them up. And so I don't know exactly, but it's definitely in the thousands and it's not the low thousands.
All right. Steven, similar, multi-thousands and not very glad about it. Nick?
I think I want to clarify that you're asking a group of people whose jobs are to write about credit cards. And so probably A, we have more than we would if we didn't write about them. And then B, you're also asking people who are pretty hyper-focused on eking all of the value out of these things. And so, we're more likely, I think, to have a whole bunch of them, at least short-term. And so, to quote a number is kind of tough because you quote a number and you say, well, yeah, but I would close this one or I earned a welcome bonus on this that more than canceled out the cost of admission. So I don't have an exact figure either. I know in the post that I wrote recently, I wrote about how just in ultra premium cards, I was, north of $5,000. And then when you add the rest of the cards in, it's more. Wow. So it adds up, but for us in part it's like just part of the cost of doing business. So
no disclaimers allowed.
First step is to admit you have a problem. I think
we're all there. So, do as we say, not as we do.
Yes. So Nick's summary is multi-thousands, but don't do that.
Yeah, I mean most people don't need to do that. Most people aren't gonna go as crazy about it as we do.
Interesting to see if it will be the same next year. Seems like there were a lot of ultra premium cards.
Well, by next year, we could be in multi-thousands with just one card, probably. Yeah. the way the annual fees are going.
That's true.
I think it's unlikely any of us is going to be under multiple thousands anytime soon.
For sure.
So we're all going to be in that boat no matter what, probably for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. But don't do as we say. Or don't do as we do, do as we say. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. We do these once a month, the first Wednesday of every month at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Thanks for joining. We'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm David Brody, co-host of the Travel in 10 podcast. Together, myself and my co-host, Tim Johnson, have traveled to over 150 countries around the world and all seven continents. Now we're sharing our favorite places, some of our best tips and experiences from all around the world in just 10 minutes on Travel in 10. Join us at voyescape.com.
I'm Pauline Frommer. I've spent most of my life writing, talking, and thinking about travel. Not just where to go, but how to go in a way that's meaningful. On the Frommer's Travel Show, we explore the trends, people, and ideas shaping how we see the world. If you care about the why as much as the where, I hope you'll join me. You can find new episodes weekly at voyescape.com.